We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
We reject globalism and we embrace patriotism. We believe that every American citizen, no matter their background, deserves a government that is loyal to them. The Democrat Party and the extreme radical left are trying to abolish the distinction between citizens and non-citizens.
There's the president at his rally in Louisiana over the weekend, where he continued to ask, where's Hunter? By the way, got some t-shirts, by the way, that just hot off the press here. In fact, these t-shirts were still warm when I got them out of the box a few minutes ago. My friend Richie dropped these off, and you can see here, I'm holding it up right now if you're watching on the studio camera there, Where's Hunter? These fantastic Where's Hunter t-shirts with the Mark Cox Show logo there on the sleeve.
Very nicely done.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. Looks, yeah, man. Yeah, thanks to him. He did a great job. They're being given away today right here on this radio program. Gave one away earlier to Michael Viloff of Alton. We appreciate him listening. We'll give away another one next hour and then two every day this week. Believe it or not, we have an idea where Hunter is, or at least where he was.
Mm-hmm.
He was at his home in Los Angeles, and he allowed a reporter from the hard-hitting news organization known as ABC News to come in and do an interview with him at his home. A no-holds-barred interview. Of course, tightly edited by ABC News to make whatever point it is they want to make out of the whole thing. I said earlier, who is Amy Robach? And I was informed by Carl Middleman, who's sitting out helping us this morning in place of Zach Factor, that she is the anchor of 2020,
mm-hmm.
One of the co-anchors.
Yeah, I looked her up, but she wasn't super familiar to me.
I've never heard of her.
Yeah.
Not that, I mean, she may do a fine job. I just think it's interesting that instead of picking a reporter from each network or holding a news conference where somebody may question him on something that he doesn't want to talk about, he picked a friendly media outlet to go sit down with for a few minutes. You know, like Trump or dislike Trump, he's not afraid to talk to anybody. He might prefer to call into Fox and Friends because he watches it all the time, but he talks to everybody in the media, takes all questions, and he may criticize you for your question. But he still takes the question,
yeah.
Right? When he's walking to the helicopter, it's what he does. Not the Bidens. This is a tightly controlled media script here right now because they want to try to get Joe Biden elected president. So he'll be on ABC's Good Morning America by tape tomorrow. Well, it's not even tape anymore. It's digital.
We know what you mean.
I keep dating myself. I'm a nattering nabob of negativity sometimes.
Who said that?
Spiro Agnew.
Oh,
did you know that?
Well, now I do.
I said LBJ earlier. I knew it was from LBJ's time. Spiro Agnew is his vice president. My grandfather hated Spiro Agnew with a purple passion. Or he was he was with Nixon, right? He hated Spiro Agnew. Called him Spiro Gagnew, as I remember correctly, from my childhood. So,
yeah. Anyway. In your grandpa's defense, it is easy to make fun of that name.
Nattering nabob of negativity. So that's it.
I cleared that one.
Apologize for missing that. I was in the right era. I just had the wrong person. A lot of things came out of LBJ's mouth. That wasn't one of them. All right. Where's Chris Arps when I need him? He loves LBJ. He's been to the museum and everything. He goes to all those museums. I know he does. Tell you what, let's get to our friend Rodney Boyd. I've had him on hold too long here this morning. Rod the Bod on the line. Rodney, good morning to you.
Well, I wish keeping me on hold would channel some of that energy to our beloved Cardinals. So,
yeah.
Deviate for a second. Anything we can do, channel, go back in history, whatever, for today's game, let's do it. Go Cards.
Yeah, that's true. We're going to talk to Tom Ackerman about that coming up a little later because, you know, my question to Tom is going to be, what happened? I mean, I went to the game Saturday, and you're thinking they explode for, what, 12 runs, 10, 11 runs in one inning.
They make history, yes, sir.
And then we can't get us more than one run out of the next 18.
Yeah, well, hopefully all of that is over with.
Turn it around today.
Yeah, we have. We have to. We've seen this before. So let's everybody just go Cards, go Cards.
Go Cardinals. We'll be watching tonight. What time do you say? What time is it?
6:38.
Mm-hmm. Ought to be good. That's good. So what's going on in Jeff City politics right now? Is everybody talking about the possibility of doing something on these petitions?
You know, I will tell you, that conversation is probably going to reemerge. And we now have, I think, there was 100, I was looking at some statistics, and I talked with the Secretary of State's office about this recently, because I keep watching this process, this initiative petition process, because it's become almost as important, if not in some cases more important than what happens inside the Capitol. For your listeners, we've gotten things like Clean Missouri, medicinal marijuana, right to work overturn. All those things were done through the initiative petition process. And those are big, you know, impactful policy changes to our state. So now there was like 125 files since session ended. I think 54 have been certified for signature gathering. So, and then I was out over the weekend, and I see these people all over the place with these pads, and they're asking people to sign stuff. And I'm telling my wife, I wonder if people even know what they're really doing. But it is our process. It's in our Constitution. But there are a lot of initiative petitions moving now, everything from expanding Medicaid to now changing how we fund the school system. So this is an issue that I'd ask your listeners as we go about our busy way. When somebody approaches you to sign something, just make sure you know what they're asking you to sign and what impact it's going to have on your life, because these things are done outside of the traditional process for a reason. They probably can't get through the legislature, or they probably don't like what the legislature would do. And the legislature, for better or for worse, that's the entity that represents each of us in terms of state laws, rules, and regs. So when everybody's now rushing outside of that process to do things en masse, we're going to end up with a lot more impactful things that we don't fully understand until they actually pass, because you get these fancy, funny-sounding things like Clean Up Missouri or this or that, and then everybody rushes to the polls and tries to learn it while they're voting.
Clean Missouri. That is such a foreign concept to me, to sign a petition and not understand what in the hell I'm signing my name to, but I'm guessing that it happens.
It happens. It happens a lot, and we have a very low bar for what people are expected for changing our Constitution. And look, the state Constitution should be the third rail that protects us from a bunch of bad ideas, and right now it's become very, very fungible. People just, you know, get the signatures and then we go to change it. So very, 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 very troubling for me, but I pay too much attention to that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I just don't know. You know, I've talked to the governor about this. I've talked to state senators and of course state representatives about changing this. Everybody's very cautious.
And you should be cautious, Mark, but we shouldn't be casual. What I mean by that is, you know, the way we change our Constitution should have a higher threshold than we do now, and I think most people would agree with that. And the devil's in the details. What do we do? What kind of requirements do we put on it? And I'm hoping that people will begin to talk about that this session. Otherwise, I think if we go through another cycle of massive reforms in policy, Mark, that's just done through initiative petition, if we expand Medicaid, if we change how we fund our foundation formula, for goodness sake, if we change how we fund our schools, at that point, I think you're going to create an open gate, like in California, where most of the laws are made by initiative petition. And I don't think that that's the healthy way, that's just one person's opinion, to create state constitutional changes in the law without really having people fully understand what they're doing. I mean, as you know, I've talked about this many times. it's too difficult for people to learn these complex issues once you narrow it down to, you know, 120 words on a petition summary on the ballot, because you can bake so many powerful things in there, like creating a new demographer way to draw districts and things that people just don't understand. So that we will be following it. I'm going to do with your show and my show a more comprehensive analysis of what's coming, what people are really trying to do, so that listeners understand this is more than just what the summary sounds like.
Yeah, well, hopefully we get that addressed, because that and being able to, you know, in addition to the medical marijuana and the recreational marijuana that we see coming down the chart, changes to Medicaid, I mean, all of these things are things that people just plan to bypass the legislature on it because they're unhappy. And, you know, a lot of these, are, let's just be honest about it, are left-wing, I would consider, issues.
Yeah, I mean, the issues are on both sides of the aisle, but because the legislature is predominantly majority super Republican, a lot of groups that can't get a bill through that assembly are now saying, "Forget it. We're just going to change the Constitution. We're going to call it this. We're going to call it that," and that is where you get into literally creating policies and laws that really the citizens don't fully comprehend exactly what they're doing, because you're really voting on a summary. You're voting on a summary of something, and the best example I can give you is Clean Missouri. Everybody thought they were cleaning up Jefferson City. Very few people understood that they were literally about to change the way we draw, or who draws, or who determines your representative form of government by the redistricting language, because it wasn't really that clear. And my only point is, when people bypass the legislature, they have a certain benefit of obscurity in what they're really trying to do. And that seems to be the new norm when you've got 100-plus initiative petitions filed and over half, roughly just under half of them, approved for circulation. So we're also going to be stopped more and more at the grocery store, coming out of the library, or local fairs or festivities with people saying, "Hey, do you want to make your state better? Just sign your name here."
Yeah.
Voter.
Yeah. Very true. I understand there's some new polling out by the folks at the Missouri Scout. I'm anxious to see that and see, because from what I was told, it doesn't bode well for Democrats who want to run for statewide office in Missouri in the next go round.
No, it doesn't. What everybody is watching is, it's interesting because you get a little bit lower below that, and it's always a question, as you and I talked about cycle after cycle, about base, what motivates the base. And so there's starting to be a real consensus around the idea that impeachment talk is going to mobilize the Trump base, is going to make people who voted for Trump, who may have otherwise not been sort of charged up, recharged, kind of like the Kavanaugh hearings did. The other side of it is, in some of the inner ring suburbs, will impeachment, what will it do for independence? What will it do for people that were, you know, didn't like Hillary Clinton, didn't really necessarily want to get involved to support her, so they voted for Trump? So we're going to be watching very closely what this impeachment conversation does in three phases. One, what does it do for turnout for the Trump base? It seems, and the president, as you've seen, is really getting out more and more, and probably will continue to do more of his town hall rallies, which rev up the base. But it's also got a lot of people who are in the inner ring suburbs concerned, Republicans that won in districts by slim majorities, even with the president winning Missouri in double digits. And so there are some key races around the state, in our region, in Columbia, other parts of the state, where people are going to be watching to see, what is this impeachment chatter, what does it really do for the base, the turnout argument?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that that we find out more about that. In fact, you know, I've been talking about polling and all the different ways that, I don't know, that you can impact the way a poll turns out, with push polling and the way the questions are asked and all of that. And Rodney, I've got Titus Bond is going to join me this morning at around 8:35 from Remington Research to talk more about that. I specifically was interested in that Fox News poll that came out last week that, of course, showed a slim majority of Americans support impeachment. Then you find out that it was weighted 48% Democrats to 35% Republicans or something like that. I mean, the weighting on that poll, once you find that out, it really diminishes the outcome of it, in my opinion.
You know, Mark, you delved into some of this with a recent poll here in Missouri, and clearly it's happening nationally. I mean, the way polling is done is an enigma, so I'm real glad you're shining a spotlight on it in this respect. It seems like you can construct a poll to get to almost any result, but that often has become not what is reflective of what the community really is saying or doing. We've seen recently, we were talking, the Kansas City mayor's race had it as a statistical tie the day before the election, and the victor won by like 17 points. And I was still scratching my head looking at the polling just before, saying, well, who did they talk to? Kansas City is a pretty defined boundary. It's a pretty controllable area. How could it be that wrong? And so I'm glad that you're going to talk about this with someone from Remington, because they do a lot of polling in state and out of state. I'd love to understand how the pollsters themselves, how they account for, in some cases, just being so appreciably wrong. Going back to the 2016 election, all the way through a series of elections that matter. And I think what's going to happen is if we come through another national cycle and the polling is as wrong as it can be and has been, I think people are going to have to redefine polling, or the credibility of any poll will be shrugged off. And that's kind of, we're close to that point now where people are going polling doesn't really mean that that's what I'm going to do.
We should be, Rodney. I mean, one of my questions to Mr. Bond this morning is going to be that. Why after 2016 are we still in the same place that we were in 2012 and 2016? It can't be that hard to fix unless the answer is they don't really want to fix it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's an industry, it's a business. I mean, it's a big part of the election process. So I know the pollsters want to fight for their survival, just like the TV ad people do too. But we're going to have a similar conversation at some point, you and I, about whether TV is effective. Other than getting a person's name out there, what is the real value of TV commercials in an era where everything is DVR recorded or Netflix or Hulu or whatever? So you know, it's just like TV and polling, I think, are struggling to be relevant in this age of social media where people are getting direct information from candidates, and then a lot of people are being unpolled. So, you know, what does the poll mean if the large majority of voters are unpolled? Then the question I have is, what does a poll really mean?
Have you? I mean, you're a lobbyist. Have you ever received? I mean, obviously, what I mean by that is a lot of people have your phone number. Have you ever received a cellular phone call that involved a poll?
I'll even take it one step further. I'm a little bit old school, too. I'm talking to you now on my home landline.
Okay.
I have not been polled at home. I'm here pretty much when I'm in town every morning. I'm happy to answer the phone. The message comes on the screen. I have not been polled in my life. And, I don't know who's being polled. Now, my grandmother has a landline. She's at home every day. She's 86 years old. I ask her every cycle when all of these polls come out, and she's a registered voter, and, you know, she answers her phone. She takes it as a duty, a civic duty, to answer the phone, which sometimes I find very, very funny because mostly people are selling her stuff.
Right.
She has not been polled. She says, no one asked me those questions. So until my grandmother, who answers the phone every day, tells me she's answered some of these polling questions, I'm really, really intrigued by who is getting polled and how they're and that assessment becomes credible enough for people to feel like we should follow it.
It's a great question. Rodney Boyd, thanks as always, my friend. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate
that. Go Cards, go Cards, go Cards.
Go Cardinals. Going to talk to, thank you, Rodney. We're going to talk to Tom Ackerman about that coming up here shortly. What's gone wrong? Why did the bats go silent? Is it just really good pitching that's kind of stifled us? Are people trying to do too much? When they're up to bat, do you have to know, your limitations? I don't know. I can't hit an 80-mile-an-hour fastball. I know that. Kudos to them, but we're pulling for them. We'll see what the Dalai Lama of St. Louis Sports thinks about it when we come back.